Time for this week's Sports Lit 101. As Bruce is here with a brand new book that I personally can't wait to read, and you certainly have spoken very highly of this.
This is really fun. This is a book that you can learn a lot about the early days of the NFL. You can learn a lot about how less corrupt college sports were at the time, but you can just laugh. This book has a lot of humor in it, and a lot of people wouldn't remember Ron McDowell, because he played originally in AFL, then in the NFL, but he was a defensive lineman, and people don't remember a lot of them. But I will tell you that only two people ever played more games at defensive end in pro football, and they were pretty good. Jim Marshall at 282 games, and Bruce Smith at 279. You don't do much better than that.
Pretty good company right there.
He also played on a team in Buffalo that only four guys played on the line basically all season. They did not allow a single rushing touchdown for a pro record 17 straight games. That's over two. It went a whole season without anyone scoring a rushing touchdown. He was brought back late in his career. George Allen went and got him when he built the Over the Hill gang, when he decided that rookies were not the way to go, that he wanted to use the experience of all these players. But what's really interesting about this story is this is a story of a guy and his high school sweetheart and carving a life out both as a pro football player. And at the same time, he became a very successful home builder, did a number of other things. But he was a guy that loved to have fun. The name The Dancing Bear does not come from his quick feet and huge size. But one night, he and Sonny Jurgensen told him that he could dance on a table at a bar in Washington, and longer than McDowell could. So McDowell, who was a much bigger man than Sonny Jurgensen, jumped up on the table. Jurgensen fell off. McDowell continued to dance, jumped down, continued to dance for another hour without stopping, and was named as the Dancing Bear. But the interesting thing also about McDowell is he intended, if he was going to have a pro career, to be a baseball player, and he was recruited to the University of Nebraska. Now, one of the things that Nebraska has always been able to brag about is that they're almost every year they have the highest grade point average on their athletic teams of any Division I sports program. The reason, one of the ways that they could get a lot of kids to attend the University of Nebraska was to give them academic scholarships. Because football scholarships mean that you can't have a job, there's certain things you can't do. But if you give somebody an academic scholarship, they have a little bit more freedom, and they decided that really smart football players would be the best football players to get. So they did a lot. He was there as Nebraska began to rebuild. It's pre-Tom Osborne and all that, but they're beginning to rebuild. But he was born, I'm going to just read a little bit. This is why this book is funny. I was born in Southern Ohio in a place called Longbottom, which is very close to a town called Chester. I was born in a manger, literally. My mom was out milking the cows, and all of a sudden, here I came. My first name is really Roland Owen McDowell. I was named after the doctor who delivered me on September 9th, 1939. 9-9-39, I weighed 9 pounds, 9 ounces. My mother, Ruth, always told me after that her favorite number was certainly not 9. And he goes on with this kind of very folksy way of telling the story. He tells it with Rob Morris, who was a skilled writer, but his parents didn't have a high school education. They did not know how to drive a car. They didn't have a driver's license. His brother was the first one to get one. But all through his life, serendipity seems to play a role. Just when you think his football career is over, he was playing in Houston, and he had a migraine seizure, and they cut him, and then they told no one, don't, whatever you do, no sign this guy. He's got health issues. He had to really work to get back into football. He played on the Nebraska team that broke Bud Wilkinson's great four years where Oklahoma didn't lose a game. But when he goes to Buffalo, he realizes that it's great to play football, but he can see way into the future. Now, we've talked many times how pro football players in the 60s and 70s had to have off-season jobs, but he wanted to have an off-season career. He now owns a furniture-making company, but he started out building houses. And he sold a lot of them to players. He would build subdivisions. He would rehab old houses. He had a farm outside of Buffalo, big farm that he rehabbed, and it was where the team had all their parties. Every Halloween, they would have a costume party. One year, he's in a tutu. One year, he became they turn him into a turtle, but the carapace that they made was too big to get through the doors. So people had to come upstairs and see Ron before the party could begin. I mean, it's, and everybody who talks about him in this book, and it's a who's who of football. I mean, just on the back page, you got Kenny Houston, Mike Stratton, Joe Namath. If there was a famous football player, then he came across him, a big buddy of George Blandis. And all they talk about was this guy who wouldn't stop laughing, that he was always fun, that he always had some kind of a joke going on, that he once drove off with one of his fellow players' RVs without unplugging it because he was trying to get back to camp on time. He made you understand a couple of things. One, that he was there when pro football began to really integrate, that he had come from a family where he could never really understand the kind of prejudice that he ran across. That he was there when he played for Washington, they didn't have a practice facility. They would drive around. They didn't go to the same park every day. They would drive around to find a park that had so few people in it they could play, or they could bribe the kids not to play. That if you got cut, you didn't get paid anymore. I mean, you got right. you got your salary. You got cut. That was it. There were no bonus guarantees. When he started playing football, when Joe Namath signed his $400,000 contract, which everybody thought was crazy, the average player in the NFL was making $12,000 a year.
Wow.
$12,000 a year. And he talked about how in the AFL and the NFL, they had sort of this gentleman's agreement for a while. And Upton has talked about this, Upton Bell, when he's been on the show. And then the Giants signed Pete Gogolak, and boy, that was it. And everybody's raiding everybody. It'll make you laugh, but it'll really humanize football. And there's a couple of other things. He's a very close friend with Pat Fisher, who played with both in Washington and at Nebraska. And Pat Fisher is suffering badly from dementia, or is in the process of decline. So he doesn't overlook some of the tough stuff about football. But he also sort of indicates that when they played less and practiced less, they had fewer injuries. When they were in pads every day, they had fewer injuries. And he has some interesting observations about that. He doesn't claim to be an expert on things he's not an expert on, which some of these sports books and writers do. But the great thing is it's a couple of hundred pages long, and you can just read right through this. And he's gone on to become quite a philanthropist. As a lot of people say, if Dan Dierdorf is in the Hall of Fame, why the hell isn't Ron McDowell, whose numbers are way better? Mm-hmm. But he was apparently just a guy that never sought accolades, just did what he did. His family's gone on to do a lot of wonderful things for people. You got a sports fan, and male, female, whether you like pro sports or not, The Dancing Bear, my 18 years in the trenches of the AFL and NFL, is really a good book.
Ron McDowell, the author. I look forward to reading it. And what's up next week on Sports?
Well, I think what we're going to do is, because I have a lot of football books, is we're going to switch gears and do Fit for America. This is about John L. Griffith, who not many people know, but is probably more responsible for the NCAA and the way that sports are run in this country, the birth of collegiate sports in this country. I think he'd be horrified by the way things went now. But the author of this book discovered the Athletic Journal, which was a publication from 1921 into the 40s that was run by Griffith. And when he looked in it, he discovered, wow, this guy was connected to everybody, and has a lot to do with the military and wanting to get more collegiate athletes to become officers and the like. It's interesting so far.
Excellent.
If not, then we'll talk. If it turns out to be too dry, we'll talk about Collision of Wills, Johnny Unitas, and Don Shula, and the rise of the modern NFL.
Sounds like we can't go wrong either way.
Yeah, and I got two more that just arrived yesterday.
Outstanding. Thanks, Bruce.
My pleasure.